Okay, welcome everybody. Today we are live for an hour long with a great guest I have today, Dr. Daria Chuck-Brock. She is a PhD in plant biology and also entrepreneur, founder of DC Sci Art. How are you, Daria? Thanks for being my guest today. It's a great pleasure to have you.
Thanks a lot for inviting me. I'm doing well and excited for this now today.
Fantastic. So I wanted to have you today because you are this type of personality who have this kind of dual, you know, expertise, science, but also art, applied art, you know, and it's very interesting to have you because you are a model for many scientists who would like to, you know, to do something else, but related to science. And this is great to have you today with me. If you're okay, we are going to talk about your little bit, your background, your childhood, if you were already an artist or a scientist or both, and how did you evolve and why did you enter into a scientific study at university and so on. And then we will talk about more in depth about your expertise in scientific illustration. Do you agree?
Yes, sounds good.
Fantastic. So, Daria, please tell us a little bit about your childhood. Did you already very young interested by art or science, or how this both things came together? Because it could be a little bit, you know, polarizing thing. You got very rational scientific studies and also art, which is more, you know, emotional and so on. So how was your childhood?
So now if I look at it in retrospect, I think both of these sides were always inside of me, like the artistic side and also the scientific side. So I grew up, my parents telling me that I would draw a lot and paint when I was small already. And my dad was an artist. And so that's something, art was always surrounding me when I grew up. And at the same time, I was always super interested in nature and my surrounding and the world and, you know, plants, animals, bugs, being in the forest. And both of my parents were very much into nature as well. So we would go for hiking and camping. And this would be activities that were very normal for me when I was younger. So it was always kind of around me and inside of me. And somehow it merged, it fitted. And then when I would go to school, to high school, my favorite subjects and topics would be science and art. So this would also, I would choose those as my majors as well throughout high school.
So you are going too fast, Lam. But I have two questions. First, your father was a kind of role model because he was an artist. In what was his what is his major? I mean, drawing, sculpture, or
like everything. Basically, my dad was able to do anything. He would paint, he would draw, he would sculpt, he would like do woodwork, he would like all the things. And I have this, you know, from childhood memories, I have this smell of oil and turpentine when he would do his oil paintings. So this is something very, very present inside of me, together with like tobacco smoke, because he would smoke a pipe. So this is something that was always as a memory. And my dad, he had this innate talent. I think it was from the get-go. He was born and he had it. That's how he grew up. And then he would continue with it. But it was, and what he worked with, he then became, he worked in the opera for everything that's needed on the stage and in the set of requisites. So he would do all these things, paintings, sculpturings, and all that. But actually, he was the perfect example of this archetype of an artist that is more like this plagued artist with all the, you know, artistic like crazinesses and this like, you know. So I also, even though I saw that he was so great at everything that he was doing, I also at the same time realized like, you know, you can't make a living from art, and art is like, you know, nice to have but not necessary. And I don't necessarily want to become that type of an artist with all these issues that we as people have, like he had, like I had, like everybody of us had. It's kind of a little bit I felt, that's how I perceived it, a little bit exhilarated when being this kind of plagued typical artist, you know.
And you were allowed to, you know, to play with his painting and stuff in his atelier. I don't know how can say it in English. Atelier is the place where artists made their stuff, you know.
Yes.
You were allowed to go and to play with the painting and so on. So you have already your hands on all of his stuff.
Not quite, actually. And that's where my mom actually comes in, because my dad was not very intuitive and good at teaching this. And so even though it was quite clear that I also had this kind of tendency towards art, it was not so easy for him to teach me and to show me things. But that's where my mom came in. My mom would be very creative as well, not the typical artist. But she would, you know, do all kinds of crafts with us, for example. And she's very creative in, like, when it comes to life and solving things. So she would always, like, encourage me to paint, to draw, and to, like, gift me paints, for example, or little courses here and there. And she would also encourage my dad then to try to teach me a little bit. But his way of teaching was very, I think, artistically speaking, you know, of course, you need to sit down and learn perspectives and shadows and lightnings and still lifes. But it was like, it was boring for me. Mm. That was his way of trying to teach me, but I was bored. So it was a little bit of a, you know, it was a good combination. My dad and my mom kind of in their own ways living, or like kind of supporting me in this artistic side of me. Yeah.
I will make a jump in the time. Does he see your way of doing art now? We know with these digital tablets and so on. Is it something weird for him, or he adopted also the tools?
Oh, my dad, no, hell no. He's not painting and doing anything artistic anymore. This stopped. And he sees what I do. And I sometimes, you know, when I would go and visit, they live in Germany, I live in Sweden, I bring my iPad tablet. So I'd show him how, that's one of the tools that I use. And he would be very interested in it, but he wouldn't use it at all. I think it's not, he doesn't have a phone. He doesn't know how to turn on a computer. So he's very anti-technology.
I can understand. it's really funny. So it's another point you say that very interesting is that in high school in Poland, right?
Germany.
Germany, okay. Mm-hmm. It's interesting that you say that you were able at the same time to follow scientific study and to choose art as an option. Mm-hmm. It's very interesting to see the difference of education between, for example, Germany and France. In France, the education system, you know, make a kind of very strict dichotomy between rational education, science, math, biology, and all the hard science, and those who want to study, you know, soft science and literature, art, and etc. And in high school, you have to choose. You can't, follow scientific study in high school and have the art as an option. You don't have the option. You know, you have to choose between rationality or, let's say, irrationality. You know? Yeah, it's stupid, and it's killing all the creativity of our elite, because the scientific study are supposed to produce the elite of France, and they are very dry. You know, they don't have any emotion. They are very technocratic, and this is the education system that France chose for as a model. And it's very interesting to see that just another country, Germany, that is perceived by French as a very, you know, very technical science, you know, and very rational, and they offer this option to science students to also to have an art as a minor or as a major. You told me that, so this is very, very interesting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was very happy, because when it came, we always had this throughout high school, this phases of where we could pick subjects. So I had a phase where I would pick a lot of languages. So I'd add French and Spanish and Latin and stuff. And then when I would go further, I realized, but I can choose anything else, you know, and I really loved art. And I was the only one with a combination of a biology and an art major. So nobody else had this type of combination. It's not such a common thing to do, but I, didn't care, because I just wanted to do what I'm drawn to. You know, I didn't want to go for this, what everybody's supposed to do or what's supposedly the most difficult, or I mean, people wouldn't choose art because they can't do it. So for certain people, art is difficult. But for me, I wanted really to go along what I kind of, you know, where my heart goes towards. So that's why I picked these two. And it was, yeah, I loved it.
So, and then for your university study, you oriented all at the first year toward plant biology, or did it something came at the end when you want to choose your PhD? How do you orientate, you know, your way into the university?
So the first thing that I thought when I finished my high school, I thought, okay, I love the science and I love the art. So what do I want to do, go about? Like, and with art, I had this, you know, because I grew up with my dad the way he was, and the feeling of like, you know, art and generally what society says, you can't make a living with art. I had all these wrong beliefs instilled in my mind. And then seeing technology rising, because I grew up without a phone and without computers. So then suddenly all of these things appeared. And then I said like, technology, I don't like it. I will not draw on the computer. I hate it. That's not real art. These types of things is what I thought. So, and I, as I love biology and art a lot, I decided I wanted to study biology. And the thing is, because I had this major in biology, we had a really great teacher there, and I was doing like a exam work that was specifically related to my family and the disability that runs in my family. So I was able to find out about that on a genetic level. So I got in contact with a human's genetic lab, and I could collect samples of my family members. And then I thought in my high school, oh, I'm finding out the reason of my disability in the family. Didn't work. But after like I finished high school, I contacted the lab and asked if I could do an internship. And they agreed, because I thought maybe if I want to study biology, I should see if I like to work in the lab. So they agreed. They took me in for like 7 or 8 weeks. I went to Poland, collected blood samples of my family and members, went to the lab and did, you know, everything, PCR, phylogenetic analysis, and so on and so forth for 7 weeks. I thought like, I love to work in the lab. I should go for biology, you know, that's decided basically. So this is how I you know, got there somehow.
And at the same time, during, you know, during the bachelor and the master, did you nurture your artistic techniques, or did you discover, you know, scientific illustration, particularly with the digital tools now lately, or how does it come into your work?
That was actually a little bit. Like during my bachelor's already, I noticed that I am drawn to mostly plant sciences. Mm-hmm. That was like immediately everything that with plant sciences was where my heart would, you know, beat towards. And then with my bachelor thesis and my master thesis, I went to a plant laboratory. Mm-hmm. And there in the theses, when I was supposed to write them or make presentations, I would do visuals already. But I didn't have it on my mind that that's kind of a job or anything. I just thought like, oh, you know, I draw with very simple tools, whatever I had, digital tools, and just visualize, because I hated to copy things. I didn't want to take something that somebody else did. And I loved art, so I kind of did it automatically. But it didn't click for me until my PhD, actually. So it's only in my PhD, when I already decided to go for plants, in my PhD, I realized, man, that's the shit. That's what I want to do.
It's fascinating because, you know, the best way to communicate experimental science, I don't know for formal science, because there are math and, you know, and theoretical science such as theoretical physics. But in experimental science, the best way to communicate anything, any idea, any experiment design, is by drawing. You know, we are so I can guess that when you show your poster or your thesis, bachelor thesis, master's, with your own illustration, it was very, it should have surely impressed the professors.
I was not a very good person when it comes to exams during the studies, but I always made my practical works, and my bachelor thesis was always like, it was always top grade, same as master thesis. And it was a little bit different because I also put a lot of effort in it, and I decided I'm going to write it in English as well, even though I studied in German. So it was, and also my presentations usually were quite good and visual. Yeah. If I think back.
Fantastic. So, and how did you decide to enter a PhD program? Because you could have specialized in scientific illustration at the master level, start working for a scientific journal as an illustrator. Mm-hmm. Why did you choose to enter a PhD program? Because it's a very it's not just most people think it's just one new year. No, it's 3 years, so it's just like starting again a whole new path into the university time. Because from bachelor to the master, we have 3 years. And PhD is not just one supplementary year, it's three supplementary years. So it's doubled, the time in university. So why did you choose to enter a PhD program?
So there are several reasons. And in my case, the bachelor was 3 years, the master was 2 years, and the PhD was 5 years. In total, it's 10 years. Why I decided is because after my master's, I felt, I don't really want to go and look for a job. I don't want to work and apply and for companies and work somewhere. Mm. I felt if I do a PhD, and I really enjoyed working in the lab, doing research. For me, it's like solving riddles, and I really enjoyed doing experiments and all the reading and the writing and everything. And I thought, if I do a PhD, I kind of extend a little bit my youth. It's not yet like a full serious job in some kind of company, which I didn't feel like applying to any of those. I didn't want to enter the workforce yet somehow. I felt if I do a PhD, I extend a little bit this research riddle science, plant science bubble. And then in the end, it was a very funny synchronicity, I call it, because in my master studies, in my thesis, my boss sent me to Sweden, to Umeå, where I am now, to do experiments for my thesis. And I got to know the lab that I did my PhD in. So then I really enjoyed the place here. I immediately fell in love, basically, with the place and with my supervisors back then. So I just asked them if they want to take me as a PhD student, and they agreed. Because the thing is, for me, it is super important to go and do something where my heart, beats for, and my soul kind of, lights up, but also the people. I need to connect with the people. Mm-hmm. And it was really nice. These two of my supervisors that then became my supervisors for my PhD thesis, I really connected well with them. And I liked the place. I liked the north of Sweden. So there were so many factors that I felt like immediately kind of, that's my spot to be for the next 5 years. So that was an easy, intuitive decision with all the factors that are important for me, people, place, and then everything kind of fitted.
So you at that time, you followed your passion for science and research. It's great. And just a digression to all people who are following us. I apologize. I don't know why. The live on my LinkedIn doesn't work, but I put the YouTube link on the comment. So if you wanna follow the live, it's in the link is in the comment section. But the live on the LinkedIn of Daria works perfectly. I checked, it works. So I don't know why it's a technical issue.
Yes,
something happens. So yep. I apologize for that. So you end your PhD and once again, why didn't you continue the academic career and pursue with a postdoc, etc.? You know how it works. And what was the transition to quit? Let's say the academic world, and to little by little becoming an entrepreneur.
It was again several little moments, but some of them were little crises during the PhD, realizing certain things that. One of the biggest one is that I didn't feel like me as a person, my personality, the way I am, what I feel is important, my morals and ethical values. I didn't feel that I fit. It was like a complete mismatch in how the academic system works. So I didn't feel kind of aligned with that. And then I all kinds of things like the way things work. I got really disappointed, the whole system, because my topic and my research group, my supervisors were great, but everything else around, and then this this unhealthy way of how academia works, it was just completely, I was disappointed. I thought it's not just doing science and solving riddles for the sake of it. There's so much bureaucracy, there's so much politics, there's so much bullpoop around, and I was just like, I don't want that. And I am the way that I am, that I also feel like I would like to enjoy my life. And I am a certain way that I felt that it, even if I think it might be needed, this type of behavior and people in academia, it's not really wanted yet. The system is not there yet to switch. So I decided, I don't want to continue. At the same time, while I was writing my papers and doing my research and posters and stuff, I realized I need to visualize everything that I do. So that's where it came in, like, oh, I need to like basically illustrate what is it that I'm doing, the model of my first author, author paper, for example. And then I could just get lost in it. Like for hours, I could sit and illustrate what I was doing for my own science, you know? And then my bosses realized that I like this and that I'm good at it. So then they asked me for help for their things. And then other colleagues started asking me for help as well. And then certain other occasions occurred where I realized, you know, I don't want to stay here, but I love science and you know, art creeped kind of back in again. So why should maybe just go for that? I should become a scientific illustrator after my PhD. The decision done, basically.
So you knew that this job exists already. No, it's not something you know, you discovered, you know already that scientific illustration as a job exists.
No.
For example, for scientific journals or you know, the poster that the manufacturer offered to the labs. You didn't know that just
I didn't, such a job. I didn't really, after I thought, you know, I would like to do this, I started to do research and there is something like a scientific illustrator. What most of the time it was this classical botanical or anatomical drawings that were there, you know, and that was not something that I wanted to do. I would be more on the molecular physiology side. But then I realized, okay, this is something that has always kind of been there, but not really, because people would, in my surrounding, nobody would work with a scientific illustrator. I've never heard of anyone doing that. So usually people would, you know, paste together their squares and circles in PowerPoint, but I wasn't in contact with any journal. So I wasn't aware that there is actually professionals. So it was not only after reading and then I realized, man, like, where are all those people? You don't find these official positions, maybe now more, because I think it changed, but you don't find these official positions in journals because it's just something not really super common, but I think it's growing. So it will become more and more important. So, yeah.
So you just decided to, okay, maybe I can do that. And how did you put the first step and decided to, you know, to launch your own business? And how did you market yourself? How did you design all your offers? And because it's something having an expertise or a talent, and it's something else to make it a business.
Yeah, like huge difference for sure. And when I, during my PhD, when I decided that I want to do that, without knowing even how I want to do it, I thought like, okay, if I want that and nobody knows that I can do it and I want to do it for them, what's the point? So then I had to face my first fear of social media because I didn't like social media at all. So, okay, maybe I should get myself an Instagram and a Twitter diary and then just like, you know, get used to these type of things. So these were my initial things. And then to share this with people, to speak about it as well in my surrounding. And then after I defended my PhD, I always thought the best case scenario would be if I have like a part-time position in the beginning and then like I can start it slowly. So I have my basic costs covered and I don't have any stress and panic. And in the first half year after my PhD, I did a lot of things. For example, I got a job coach and business coach. So then because now, like I told my background a bit, it's basically biology and art and like two nerdy topics, nothing with business. And I hated money all my life. You know, nobody really has any business in my family, my close family. So it's completely, that's as far away as it could be for me, who I am. So, but then after this half year after my PhD, I got a business coach from an insurance that I had through the PhD being employed. And then she helped me with a business plan, with a budget, with a survey. And she introduced me to an accountant. She said, that's really important. So I still work with that accountant because one of my other biggest fears was money, bills, taxes. What if I do something wrong and they kick me out of the country? Stuff like that. And having an accountant following my things would be very, like, was very, is still very good. And then I also applied for a startup incubator. So that means it's an institution basically funded by universities, also the EU, where they have a lot of job coaches with a lot of different expertise and they help startups. So I got accepted. So then I got, you know, in contact with a lot of different people that know a lot of things about marketing, sales, branding, la, la, la. I also went to like business school in Light Swedish. That's also something for free that they offer, because Sweden is quite good when it comes to entrepreneurship. They support. So I went to learn all of these tiny things and little courses here and there. And at some point, I also went to the editor-in-chief of a journal, and Physiologia Plantarum is the journal. That's a, and he was editor-in-chief on our and working in our department. And I actually illustrated for that journal before, because I won a grant. So I just went to his office and asked him, and he knew that I wanted to become a scientific illustrator and start my company. But I went anyways to his office and asked him if they need somebody like me at the journal, like that I could help them with what I've done before. And then he said, you know what? You know, this one colleague is going on maternity leave. Do you want to replace her for a year and do illustrations? So that was a perfect thing that I manifested it. I was able to, in the first year that I started my company, started in the startup incubator. I also started at the journal for 75% the first half year and then 50% the second half year. And then I could kind of start slowly with my company and clients and you know, figuring out the bookkeeping and everything and the billing. And then on my first 3 years, it was a learning and, you know, trial and error when it comes to offerings, when it comes to pricing. When it comes to how do I share what I do, all kinds of fears, you know, money, social media, networking. I don't want to be in your face. I can do a scientific illustration for you. Do you want that? So to find out what is kind of my way of going about it and navigating the business world.
What is very important is that you do your part job, you know, in the scientific journal. So you were illustrator because you learn what are the criteria of a scientific journal, what are their challenge, what are their timing, you know, of producing articles and you know, with all the stuff in place. So it was a great help for your transition, because you know exactly then the type of client you can knock at their door and what is their needs, you know, what are their needs.
Yeah, right? Even though I had quite a good like grasp of that already before, but what was really good is that I knew everything else that happens behind, you know, this black box of submitting an article. Before it was just I send it somewhere, something's happening. Now I got into the technical editing and the technicalities of figures like graphs as well. So I learned from that perspective and how long things take and so on and so forth. And I learned about social media as well through them, because I also was responsible for social media, and then we came up with different illustrative projects. So from that perspective, it was to learn how a journal works and how a journal could be a client for me, which later on also happened. I had some other illustrations I did for journals. It was very good, yeah. But also, you know, if I share with, now if I speak with my clients, they don't have to worry that I don't know how it is, like how to format things, because I know from all the clients that I did with things with, but also from the journal, I have the, you know, I have the technical details of what is important. They don't have to worry about that when it comes to me making their figures. Whatever they get is going to be accepted by the journal, or in resolution, for example, and stuff like this. So that's very valuable. And, you know, I still work with that journal together, and they kind of became my clients. So we transitioned our work agreements from the beginning of that, you know, part-time position to something else. So that's also great to have that.
That this is very, very great to hear how progressively, you know, you transition from a scientist to scientist and artist, but then to become an entrepreneur. And this is very interesting. And did you enjoy learning all this stuff about marketing, sale, and accountability, etc.? Or was it something, you know, you supported, you know, because you had to?
I enjoy to learn generally, to find out about things, and I enjoy to listen to people that are experts in what they do. And that's what we got, you know, we got these experts in marketing and this and this and that. So, and that was great. But I noticed as well that there were certain things that I just didn't give a damn about. I don't want to think about freaking sales funnels. And I don't want to think about certain this or cold calling. There were certain things that I realized that were going totally against my personality. So at some point I had two job coaches, Oscar and Marlene. amazing people. Oscar, super rational. Marlene, more flowy and intuitive. Oscar would come like, Daria, make an Excel sheet with the data and the numbers and all that. And Marlene would be a completely different way. And I immediately knew where I'm gravitating towards. Mm-hmm. Even though I can be analytic and calculate numbers and all that, I don't give a damn about most of the time Excel sheets and this rational and logical and this is how you're supposed to be doing it, so do it. I'm very like, and to kind of navigate that, I would still sometimes push myself. Okay, I do this cold call just to know how it feels. It feels like crap, so I'm not going to do it anymore. So in that way, I think it is a lot about you get the resources because I got this incubator with all the knowledge and everything. Mm-hmm. And then you see what fits, or at least for me, I see what fit and how can I adapt it. And then they would always be open to my ways of being. You know, if I'd say like, that doesn't fit me, what about this? And they'd be like, okay, let's help you with that. You know, so there is not this one way only. And because I feel it's very important that I listen to myself, how things work, because if I don't do things with joy, it's not going to help. I'm not going to continue doing it. And other people, you know, being able to adapt to the way that I was. And, you know, the startup incubator, that job coach was not the only thing, because further down the line, I noticed I have a problem with my money mindset. I have still a problem with social media and, you know, how to sell myself. So I got myself external coaches and I paid for their services specifically for issues that I found. Okay, Daria, damn it, you can't keep on going like this. You know, it's just stressing you out. So try to find help. And that's what I did as well. Again, experts in whatever it is that I felt was a weakness of mine, because I could sit on it for years and maybe fiddle around and fix it. But if I actually invest a little bit in myself, ask a person, bam, it's going to be faster, the growth, basically. Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. And when did you incorporate your company? The timing, the date, sorry, the year.
The timing?
No, the year when you incorporated your company.
It was 2019.
2019. Oh, just before. So you work nearly 1 year before the COVID, right?
Yes.
But I imagine that the COVID, how the COVID impacted your business, because you're a digital company and you sell digitally. So
yes.
But the science was stopped, you know, during the first year.
Yeah, but the thing is the writing not and the submitting not and the doing figures not. People, I didn't notice the difference actually. I didn't notice suddenly nothing came in, because people still need it. People would still need to do presentations, submit their articles and stuff like this. Because oftentimes things get delayed when, you know, it's and then this experiment and then that next thing, doing. But the writing is getting delayed and the doing figures is getting delayed. And that time I feel people would focus more on that, because I didn't see any, you know, changes.
So who are your clients? I mean, you have, of course, peer-reviewed scientific journals. You have, communication department of university and research institute. You could have popular science journals, TV.
Not yet. Not true.
Because there are less, but there are still some science TV show. They are still interesting people, and they use many illustration. So what type of client do you have, or do you have more than what I cited, or do you focus on one type of client?
No, I don't focus on one type of client. The majority of my clients are actually researchers, so professors, group leaders on institutes, universities. I also have sometimes agricultural companies, because I'm a plant biologist. That's the majority of the illustrations that I do. So some companies that do produce a certain type of product for agricultural industry sometimes need visuals. But I could also do medical illustrations. So I've done some of them about diseases or breast milk formula development and stuff like that. So it is, you know, when you said TV, I did some illustrations for my supervisor during my PhD, because he was invited to give like a TV talk and a presentation. So I did illustrations for that, but never really TV, also never newspapers or magazines. So, but as you said, like the potential client base is huge. It's freaking big, because it's not just sometimes, you know, if you have one scientific concept, you can illustrate it in 50 different ways, depending on the audience, depending where you want to post it, depending on, sometimes I do social illustrations that I use for social media or for web pages or for presentations that are a bit more fun, you know, to summarize something. And then it could be a little comic. And it is, it's, so it's, there are so many different ways of illustrating as well, that it's basically endless. In museums, could be some scientific illustrators that go more for species drawings. They could be doing illustrations for museums as well. Posters, any type of, you know, natural reserves where you have to show like an ecosystem, for example. It's everywhere. It could be pharmaceutical industry as well, biotech industry. It's really, it's what, you know, it's what you said in the beginning. We learn and we understand by looking at visuals. That's, I mean, if you were a baby and a toddler, how do you learn? That's a car, by looking at the drawing of a car. That's the first thing. And that's, it's just, it, and it, it doesn't, it didn't change and it won't change. Because now actually the opposite, like everything becomes faster and quicker and more efficient. And then you have to do everything at once, but the brain doesn't catch up. It takes so much brain capacity. But if you look at a visual, bam, like, you know, 2 minutes and you get the concept instead of 2 hours reading the freaking paper. So it's, yeah, that's, it's everywhere.
With a great illustration, you can learn what is, what it is in an, in a complex scientific article just by just watching the, you know, the illustration. If it's well done, it's usually much more informative than all the blah blah in the text.
Yes, and you know what it also does, the psychological component of, because in my PhD, if I would read an article, it would be 20 pages, not a single visual, I say I don't read it. I really, I cannot afford the time and me being tired afterwards, not being able to do anything. But if I see like somebody actually put effort, the researchers thought, let's make it easy for whoever's interested in our science to understand it. You know, you kind of, there's this psychological component of, oh, somebody actually cares if I get it or not. If I, and that's like a connecting point as well. That's immediate, like you have, at least for me, I have a better feeling. I enjoy reading it. I will remember it better. And it's making them stand out from the crowd, you know? So it's that's a huge aspect of it.
You know, we had a motto when I was in the academics and when I also was a PhD student, that older PhD student taught to younger PhD students. And we also told back to younger ones. If at the end of your PhD defense, you know, you have a beautiful illustration, the last slide, you know, the beautiful that summarizes everything you have done, you have succeeded your PhD.
That's
this
the is, way.
This is, you know, this is this, it remained in my brain. You know, when I defended my PhD, I had this last slide with my beautiful model. You know, of course, made with PowerPoint, it was ugly, but
doesn't matter.
I had it. You know, I have it. I had it. So I was sure that I was succeed, you know?
Yes, you did it right. Exactly. That's the way to go.
Particularly in biology, it's true. I don't know for chemists or for physicians, but physics. Mm-hmm. But and what about chemists and chemistry derived technology, physics and physics derived technologies? Do you have clients or do you target to have ones? And how do you interact with this other alliance in the scientific world?
Yeah, that's a bit more difficult. Actually, I had once a biophysics illustration that I've been done with like membrane components and stuff. I would actually love to illustrate more physics concepts or quantum physics concepts. That's something that I always ran away from physics. I thought like, oh my God, this is terrible. I don't get it. But I think there is a beauty in it and I'm very interested in it. So if I ever could, you know, get a hold of somebody that is working in physics and quantum physics, and it's also interested actually to somehow easy explain science to people, because not everybody wants to. Many scientists just want to go for whatever they publish. They don't want to necessarily do outreach, or they don't, scientists are special people. They don't often, you know, care so much about this human side of things and making things easy, accessible, because as much, you know, the more complex and complicated it is, the more scientific. So if I could get a hold of somebody that would love to interact and collaborate on that, I'd love to do that.
Fantastic. Let's make a call to action. People who are in the physics and chemistry world, nanotechnology is also fantastic. Yes. world of opportunity for illustration. Nanotechnologies now are just amazing, and of course quantum physics and so on. It's very fascinating. Maybe we can see some of your work right now. What do you think?
Yeah, you could show slide 24 that I sent to you, and then that's going to be a lot of planned illustrations and and that one. So you see, like, it's usually quite colorful, a lot of green, but it's
Okay. Do you see the screen?
Yeah, I see the slide, like, and the small ones on the side. Mm-hmm. It's not full screen yet.
Oh, you don't have the full screen?
Mm-mm.
It's weird because I put it on the screen. Let me recheck. Maybe I can do that. No?
No. But maybe, I don't know, maybe it's okay.
Okay, let's keep it like that because I will sell this slide as a picture in the blog article.
Yeah, exactly. You can do that. Yeah. So there you see a lot of different ones. There is the, like, sometimes it's logos as well that people want. Sometimes it's journal covers, and there's abstract ways of depicting science for book articles. Mm-hmm. And the right lower corner is the biophysics one. A lot of them is about plants, chloroplasts, you know, sometimes for social media, a little bit of something about wine. So it's very, it can be very different. And these are for publications, grants, web pages, books, covers, social media posts, or it's or one agricultural company. Mm-hmm. So it really is very, it can vary a lot. So these are just some of the illustrations.
The needs and the demand is huge because if you're a active scientist in the academia, principal investigator, assistant professor, so on, and full professor, whatever the title, and you wanna write an article, a review article, or you wanna communicate it to a wider public in TV or in a pop science, you can't transmit your idea without this. This type of illustration, and you need an expert. You can't do it by yourself. You can do it with PowerPoint, but we know all how ugly this illustration that we made with PowerPoint are ugly and boring.
Yeah,
these that are not only beautiful, but they are also very impactful. You know, they enter into our brain and they help us to understand, and it makes the message memorable. Though this is really great. So I have a question about. The emergence of so I have two separate questions.
Do you want to continue sharing the screen?
What do you think? I keep it or
I don't know. No, just so that I know that I it's fine. I mean, either way.
Okay, so you tell me. Just let me formulate my question because it's important. We have now. Artificial intelligence, you know, generative artificial intelligence. I'm pretty sure that you are not intrigued, you know, by this artificial intelligence, particularly the image generator, because they can't produce, the exactitude of what this illustration that you made, that you made. They can only be full of mistakes. So, but is there a treat for you, or do you see as an opportunity? How do you see this artificial intelligence?
So, when it comes to scientific illustrations, I think it's as you said, it's not a threat at all. Mm-hmm. It cannot replace a human being that has scientific and artistic skills and understands and knows and can adjust. And actually, a big part of being a scientific illustrator is to interact with another human being and to, you know, to be able to read like all kinds of subtle cues when it comes to soft skills and, you know, creating an environment where people feel actually safe to come and say like, I need help. Can you help me? And I pay you. So it's a lot about human interactions. And that's what people want. That's what people crave. And artificial intelligence and all these tools can't give that yet. I don't know, maybe never, because they are not human beings. Mm-hmm. But the other thing is these things are developing so fast now. And that means you need to keep up with that to be able to use it. And, you know, being a scientist and a researcher, there's so many things that you have to do. There's tons of things. Sometimes you barely have time to do research. And then there's this other thing you have to do. And then you have to do the figures as well. You can't, so you need to outsource it to somebody like me. And then if you wouldn't want that, or if you wouldn't have the budget for paying someone like me, you need to learn how to use any type of AI tool. It takes time and takes effort. It takes time away from your research, from your actual expertise, because scientists are there to do science and to do research. They're not there to, you know, do all the other 50,000 things, because that's not their expertise. Mm-hmm. And then it's just many just don't want to. And then comes to it that it just can't deliver when it comes to scientific illustrations. Generally speaking, my thought on artificial intelligence and all these tools, I'm very critical towards it. I think it's going to stay, it's going to develop, and so on and so forth. But I think it has, humanity is not really ready yet to be able to handle it properly. And I imagine, like, as I said, I grew up without, you know, no phones and no computers. So I still, you know, I was playing outside most of the time. Now the generations that, you know, they constantly hang on their electronical devices, and how are they going to learn, you know, use their brain and their critical thinking and their empathy and their human skills when all of this artificial intelligence is now thrown at us? You know, I wish sometimes that people would speak more about, okay, how do I actually handle criticism? How do I work in a team? How do I interact and communicate? How do I, all these types of soft skills that are called soft skills that are to me very essential. These are things that should be thrown out in the world of the internet, like how to learn that, how to train that, not how to press a button in some kind of a machine that gives you some kind of suboptimal visual, because you know, that's, I think I have a little bit of a critical view on that.
No, you're absolutely right. And the scientific illustration is a very good case to demonstrate how far we are to get this autonomous artificial intelligence that people fear, you know. Because if I write a prompt in ChatGPT, for example, about, hey, this is the prompt, write me a prompt for DALL-E or Midjourney to describe the photosynthesis, for example. I want it to be very precise and use molecules and molecules formula, you know, etc., blah, blah, blah. And I copy and paste the prompt into Midjourney or DALL-E. And the result is awful, full of mistakes, and you know, and you can edit it any time, 1,000 times. You know, you will never reach what you can do, because you need to understand science. You need to discuss with a scientist. You understand what he or she has in his mind, what the message he wants to communicate, and of course, translate all of this into something that is visually understandable by other human beings, scientists or non-scientists, etc., and to adapt your drawing to what are your target audience. And this is a very great case study to show how far we are from this singularity of Skynet artificial intelligence.
You know, the other thing is that many times, would you mind actually to stop sharing the screen? I like to see you bigger so that I have the feeling that I look at you.
Okay, let me just stop this.
Yes, because it feels like you have a very tiny little spot, so I don't see your eyes. Yes,
okay,
like
we're back. Yes. We're back.
Yeah, the other thing that I wanted to say, so many times I've met with scientists that after discussing the illustration with them, they realized the flaw in the writing, not that there was something wrong, but the flow of it was not quite right. Or in their head, something was so clear, but it didn't come like through in my scribbles, for example. So they sometimes say like, okay, maybe we should first do the focus on the illustration and then I rewrite the text around it. So sometimes even though scientists know so much about the thing, it's sometimes, you know, somehow hidden, and aspects of it they don't know. Only by talking to another scientist that's not an expert, these things get revealed. And an artificial intelligence like, you know, ChatGPT won't be able to do it. You know, I once tried to put Arabidopsis thaliana in the AI generative tool in Adobe Illustrator. It gave me some random, like, generic plant with two leaves. I mean, come on. There's so many things out there on the internet. That's, like, embarrassing almost. So, this is just another little anecdote. So, yeah, I think we're aligned.
Yeah, absolutely aligned. So I had, you know, another question about now your next step as a founder, as a company. Would you want to? How would you want to grow? Do you want to focus on your skills and your client, etc.? Do you want to? Do you see some kind of expansion? I don't know. Maybe hiring other illustrators and becoming an agency. Do you want maybe to also to pivot it to other type of illustration, such as animated illustration? You know, mm-hmm. I'm fascinated, you know, by animated illustration, particularly in molecular biology. You know, when you see all these molecules, because mm-hmm. they are also an extension of your expertise, you know. So, and this is fascinating. Where do you want to go?
Oh God, where do I want to go? So, like, I could start on the last thing. And when it comes to animation, I have somebody that I work with that is an animator, like a motion designer. So sometimes we do projects where I illustrate and he animates. Because if I would want to learn animation, it's a complete new job skill set, mm-hmm. and that I'm not interested in. I rather would collaborate with others. If I want to grow into an agency, it's a hard no. Mm. Because if I would do that, then that would mean I would have to, in my head, somehow stop illustrating, stop interacting with my clients and trying to find them and give them to others. And what I actually love is to interact with other people, is to learn about the science and to throw art on it. Mm-hmm. So if I would grow, these type of activities would diminish somehow, mm-hmm. and I don't want that. To collaborate with other people would be great. So for me, you know, I have so many ideas now. Like in that whole journey, I started to realize that I really like to do abstract art paintings. So part of my crazy idea for my life is to become an abstract painter. That I at some point, you know, do abstract art because I really love it. And then if clients come for scientific illustration, I still do them because I have favorite clients that always come to me and I don't want to drop them. And then the other thing is like, oh, you know, maybe I should, you know, the physics thing is somehow inside of me now. And then it's a lot of about humanity and spirituality and stuff that I like, oh my God, then so closely coupled to science actually and art. And maybe I should do that in some way, one way or another. So I have tons of ideas and I can't give you one line because for me, ideally, what I could do all the kinds of things that I like, sometimes this, sometimes that, working with that person and having that awesome client and then maybe selling some paintings here, maybe doing some kind of exhibition, maybe, you know, write a freaking comic book about basic physics concepts and making them understandable for people, normal people, and take away the fear and hate from physics that I used to have. You know, so there's so many things. I can't give you one answer.
But I got it. What is important in life is to know what you don't want to do, and you don't want to grow as an agency because it will push you out of your what you love to do, is illustration, and also moving toward animation as yourself, because it's a new job, it's a new expertise, but you can collaborate, of course, with animators or storytellers for TV, for any type of because pop science, there are different way of you know, using illustration. How would you recommend a young scientist, PhD or master degree, whatever the level, who wants to, you know, to also become a scientific illustrator? First of all, can we learn to draw, or is it innate or versus learned skills? And then the technique you use with the tablet, the software you use, are they difficult? Is it something you encourage? Because I see that you offer a mentoring program to teach scientists to become illustrator. So what is your point on that?
So if anybody wants to become a scientific illustrator, freaking go for it. It's really needed. It's needed so much, and there's not too few potential clients out in the world. There's so many instances, so many people that need it, and each one of us has a very specific niche and set of people and network that we know. I won't reach the people that you have, same to anybody else. And if you are a scientist that is interested in art and can do art, you know, and draw and illustrate, it's a really perfect combination. And then if you're also socially skilled and a decent human being, that's even better. And so these things are a really good basis. And then what to do about, like, when it comes to the, you asked if everybody can draw. So I always say, not everybody can read and write, but everybody, you give them a stick and are on the beach, will be able to draw a stick figure, and everybody else will know that's a human. So we can all draw one way or another in a different type of skill set, range of skills. Well, but it is about practice. It is about being determined and to learn and to practice and to draw and illustrate over and over again. If you don't have joy doing it, forget about it. Don't even, you know, that's no point. We won't get better and be enjoying what we do. But drawing and painting and illustrating is totally, if you have, like, you know, if you burn for it, go for it. It's just practice. And then when it comes to the tools, some of the tools have a really steep learning curve. Don't overwhelm yourself. Pick a vector-based program, whatever it is, free, paid, doesn't matter, and a raster-based program, and get yourself a tablet so that you don't have to draw with this, you know, mouse pad or the mouse and get cramps in your hand. And then become an expert in these two tools. Well, if you want to do 3D renderings, then maybe get another one, another program. But just get as good as possible at them. You don't need to have 50,000 softwares and hardwares and everything. It's not that complicated. And then it counts practice. Do and do and do. You will get better with time. And already when you have the inclination towards being interested in art and in science, you will most likely be already way better than any scientist that just doesn't give a shit about visuals.
Absolutely. And most of them use PowerPoint, you know, to make their illustrations that are awful. So there are plenty of opportunity, of course, if you like and you have this pleasure, you know, to do this job. It's a great opportunity, and you can of course help them if they want. Because I see on your site that you offer a mentoring program. So if you are a master's degree, a PhD, or postdoc, you want to, you know, to find a way to develop your skills in parallel of science but related to science. No candidate of Daria, I'm pretty sure you can help them.
Yes.
Fantastic. Daria, maybe to conclude this interview, would you like to recommend anything else about book, resource, or you want to share related to science, related to scientific communication, or absolutely something else that just, you know, to nurture our curiosity, something you like?
Oh my God, you know, you caught me in one of my weaknesses, and I can't remember titles or names of songs, books, or anything. So I cannot come up with something right from the top, but there is a lot of nice resources out there, and it really depends on what you like, also the way, you know.
What did you read or watch recently that you like it and you maybe want to share? It could be related to science or absolutely not. Anything.
Anything that I recently read or watched, and I recently discovered The Baby University by Chris Ferry, and he is making books for babies about quantum physics. Amazing.
Wow. Okay, yeah. Great.
So that's my recent discovery. I love this. And that's the way of, you know, basically bringing science to the littlest ones of our race. Mm. And I love that. So there is this, you know, gems out there that are researchers and scientists that do these other things. And that I thought was great. And then, like, connected to that, the publisher that does all kinds of, you know, children's books explaining different things. That's my recent. So, and he writes really nice blog articles as well. Chris Ferry, I can recommend.
Okay, I will add the, you know, the link in the blog article. Mm-hmm. Thank you so much, Daria.
Thanks a lot.
Did I forget to ask you a question you would like me to ask? So last word maybe.
No, I think you did. You asked a lot, and I don't think there was anything.
Okay, great. It was such a pleasure to have you because, you know, I really like your journey, you know, and how you manage the transition to become an entrepreneur. And this is really great and inspiring. And thank you again for being my guest. It was a great pleasure to have you.
Thank you so much. It was a lot of fun, and I really appreciate it.